Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the Greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 Greats. Even 51 Greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook, everybody, for a Thursday here on Patriots.com radio. I am John Rook. Thanks to Fred and Andy for the smooth handoff today from PFW in progress to Patriots playbook. And we're ready to look forward to game 5 of the Pats, week 6 of the National Football League season as they play at the San Diego Chargers this Sunday night at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego, California. The Football Night in America feature on NBC. Coming up in just a couple of moments, Peter King from NBC, Sports Illustrated, CNNSI.com, and all points in between. He'll be joining us here on the show, so you want to stay tuned for that. And we'll get his thoughts not only on the game on Sunday, but about the current state of the National Football League as well, some other things that might be going on. Certainly, there's some great divisional stories within the AFC East, the resurgence of both the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins of late. Still can't get over the fact that last two times out, the Dolphins beat the two teams that were in the AFC Championship game last year. And I'm sure they can't get over that in San Diego either, as we've talked about over the course of the first couple of days of the program this week. So, but we've had some good San Diego perspective, actually, this week, not only from Kevin Acey, who covers the Chargers for the San Diego Union Tribune on Tuesday's show, but and also on Hank Bauer, who is a former Charger player and coach and current analyst on their radio network. That was on Tuesday, so you can download the podcast there from Tuesday's show if you want to get his point of view on that. But looking forward to getting the point of view of this gentleman, Peter King, of course, as I mentioned, on the NBC Football Night in America broadcasts in the studio and from Sports Illustrated, CNNSI.com. Peter, it's wonderful to speak to you. Thanks for a couple of minutes of your time today.
Hey, you're welcome, John. How are you?
Doing well. Doing good. Very, very well. Just right off the bat, are you at all surprised that it has taken this New England team a bit of time and may still take it more time to sort of find itself when you lose a cog at quarterback like Tom Brady?
Well, I mean, I think you have to look back to 2001 when they originally replaced Bledsoe with Brady when Bledsoe got hurt. And you know, that wasn't exactly the smoothest sailing week by week in that first year.
Yeah.
And I think you compound that by the fact that I think Brady started 23 games at Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, Tom Brady had two seasons under his belt of 106,000 people screaming in his ear when he's playing football. Matt Castle is Mr. Scout Team. And he's running down on kickoffs when the Patriots first see him at USC.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, this is a whole different animal. And I think anybody who thinks that that Matt Castle would have a simple, easy, you know, clean transfer to professional football life, I think would be mistaken.
I guess then it kind of makes me look at it this way. It shows that the quarterback position is just so incredibly intricate to how teams operate, certainly offensively. Guys, you know, he's the one that hands the ball off, throws the ball, has the play called, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you consider that largely the same offense is in place for the Patriots, and yet quarterback, one person missing, it just really puts, to me, a lot of emphasis on the quarterback and how important the quarterback is, not only to the game, but to pro football in general.
Yeah, and, you know, consider this. You know, this is sometimes how I like to explain this to people. You look at Brett Favre going to the Jets.
Right.
And the Jets on offense run combination routes. You know, when their receivers go out. In other words, which most teams do. If, like, for instance, with the Patriots, if Randy Moss is single covered and he doesn't see a safety over the top, he and Tom Brady will have this understanding that, you know, unless he's supposed to run a 3 yard out or something, or a drag route across the middle. Tom Brady and he have always had the understanding that with no safety over the top, he's going to throw the ball to Moss,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he's going to throw it deep to him.
Sure.
But what happens if there's a safety maybe shading that area and all that stuff? I mean, first of all, Matt Cassel doesn't have this sort of unspoken communication with Moss that Brady had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Brett Favre learning the Jets this year. Against San Diego, he threw two interceptions where it looked like he was actually trying to throw the ball to the San Diego Chargers, one to Antonio Cromartie, where all of New York is throwing its hands in the air saying, where are you throwing the ball, you idiot? Well, it's a clear case that it's more than just studying a game plan and understanding where you're supposed to go with the ball. The communication between a receiver and a quarterback is absolutely essential, and if you haven't worked together before, that communication is going to be choppy at times.
Absolutely. Good insight on that one. Peter King, again, joining us here inside the playbook on this Thursday as the Pats and the San Diego Chargers play Sunday night from Qualcomm in San Diego.
I love this game, John.
Yeah, you know what?
This is going to be so much fun. It really is a great one.
I think both teams have a little something to prove here. I don't know that we get the rivalry feel to it that we saw in the AFC Championship or even in the regular season last year, Peter, just because you have two of the significant individuals out of this game in Brady and in Sean Merriman. But I think San Diego has really got their back against the wall here. They don't need to go 2-4.
Yeah, and it isn't only Brady and Sean Merriman, but it's also LaDainian Tomlinson. I would not be surprised if Darren Sproles touched the ball more than LaDainian Tomlinson in this game.
How hurt is Tomlinson, do you think?
Well, he's not good. I mean, you know, he's got a badly sprained big toe, and most of the people who watch the Chargers believe that thing is just not going to get better this year.
Really?
And so, you know, it's hard for a big toe to get better when you're putting the kind of pressure on it that a football player puts on it. I mean, you know, people laugh at an injury like that, and they'll say, oh, you know, you got to be able to take that. But when you think about it, a toe injury is what knocked one of the best corners we've ever seen, Deion Sanders, out of football.
Mm-hmm.
He just couldn't play anymore. You know, he had a couple of bad years toward the end, and he just couldn't play anymore because his foot hurt too much. And so I'm not saying it's the beginning of the end for Tomlinson, but what I am saying is my belief is that Norv Turner is looking at his team and saying, I got to give the ball more than, you know, 8-10 touches to Darren Sproles for us to have a chance to beat the Patriots.
On top of that, Chris Chambers is less than 100% as well. We've seen that Antonio Gates is less than 100%.
I'm not sure Antonio Gates is ever going to be what we thought he was. You know, he just, you know, he's hurt all last year. He comes back this year. He's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he's one of those guys who, you know, we're going to be talking about him like, boy, imagine if he stayed healthy like Tony Gonzalez did. I mean, he's on a good day, he's the best tight end in football, but I don't know that he's had many good days lately.
This puts an inordinate amount of pressure on Phillip Rivers. Is he in a position himself with some bruised ribs as it now stands to maybe carry this team?
I think he's going to have to, and I think the one guy who really becomes important now to this team is Vincent Jackson.
Mm.
And, you know, he's an underrated guy. He's a speed guy. He's a guy who kind of got drafted as an afterthought by San Diego, but has become really important to him. I just think now you got Phillip Rivers, you know, in his fifth year. He knows the offense so well with Norv Turner. Turner loves the guy. He can make all the throws. If he gets hot Sunday, it's going to be a difficult game for the Patriots to win.
How do you feel about the AFC East being more of a, I guess maybe more of a challenge this year, and whether or not it could benefit the Patriots in the long haul, or is this just a natural progression, especially when you lose, you know, a key player like you've lost for New England?
Well, I think that this is one of the classic NFL things. I mean, you know, Pete Rozelle's goal when he was commissioner, it wasn't to have every team 8-8, but it's to have every team having a chance to make the playoffs every year.
Right.
And so what happened this year in the AFC East is that the Jets got, I think, significantly better with Chris Jenkins, Calvin Pace, and Brett Favre. The Buffalo Bills got better because, you know, nobody thinks that this is, I mean, it's obviously not very sexy, but Paul Posluszny comes back from a season-ending injury last year, and they get Marcus Stroud from Jacksonville in trade, and their up-the-middle defense is a half yard better against the run and just significantly better overall. And then Miami, you had Bill Parcells, that whole Tony Sperano Parcells mindset. Parcells' teams in their first year in New England, with the Jets, with the Cowboys, and now in Miami, are always light years better. So you have three teams below the Patriots that have all gotten better, and you've got the Patriots who are trying to win with a kid who hasn't started a game for 9 years at quarterback. So it's obviously going to be more of a dogfight than the Patriots have. If I had to pick a winner in this division now, I'd still pick the Patriots because I think that they're a team that's built to withstand a devastating injury like Brady's, especially because Matt Castle is the type of kid, and everybody who knows him says, hey, he's the type of kid, he knows what he doesn't know. And he's not trying to be something that he isn't. He's trying to be one of 45. And that's the best thing for him to be right now. Go into every week, put one foot ahead of the other foot, don't think grandiose thoughts, execute what they've got in the game plan for you, and you'll be okay.
Peter, how does the Patriots, I mean, coming back to the pack, I guess, for lack of a better phrase here, and maybe that is an appropriate phrase here, but how does their coming back to the pack a little bit affect the race overall in the AFC? Do you look at it as it being wide open like a lot of people seem to think that way?
You know, I don't remember a year. We'd have to go back, we'd have to go back really before the Patriots won their first Super Bowl, maybe even that year, to recall a time where we can sit here right now and somebody would say Tennessee, somebody might say New England, somebody would say Pittsburgh, somebody might even say Denver, but there's nobody out there who can tell you with any certainty that, well, it's going to come down to these two teams. Mm-hmm. It's always been, hey, it's going to come down to New England or Indy, or New England, San Diego, or San Diego, Indy. But at this point, how much trust do you have? I mean, New England's totally unknown. You figure they'll win 9, 10, 11 games at least, but they really are unknown. I think Indianapolis is still going to rise because I know what's wrong with them, and I think they can fix it. I mean, what's wrong with them basically, John, is this, that teams – are looking at Indy. I'm at NBC every Sunday, and I can watch all the games,
right. And
I can see a little chunk of each game. And I'm looking at Indianapolis, and here's what I see. It is absolutely amazing that the safety is crawling down into the box on first down, and they're saying to Peyton Manning, look, we don't trust that you're 100%, because he isn't. We don't trust that you're 100%. You know what? Marvin Harrison's an old man, and we don't trust that he can beat us. So here we go. We are going to crowd the line of scrimmage, and what we're going to do is we're going to stop Joseph Addai. And, you know, how long, I mean, did we ever think that teams would load up to stop Joseph Addai over, say, Peyton Manning? I didn't think I would see that. I thought that would happen with the next running back in Indianapolis, some kid who's a high school senior right now, you know, who would be the last generation of running back under Peyton Manning. But it's happening with Peyton Manning right now, and I think the only way that the Colts can get back is they have to get one of their receivers, whether it's Gonzalez, whether it's Reggie Wayne, to become a first and second down threat the way that for years Peyton Manning had Marvin Harrison.
Right. I was just going to say, then it sounds to me like Marvin Harrison's decline is directly or at least indirectly responsible for the Colts maybe leveling off just a little bit, Peyton Manning's own injuries notwithstanding.
Yeah, and, you know, don't let anybody try to convince you that Peyton Manning is whole. You know, people have seen his knee say it's a roadmap, and it's just not right yet. And so, you know, that's a problem. The fact that they started two rookies at guard last week, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. The fact that Tony Hugo, their left tackle for the next 10 years, is out with a groin injury, forcing Charlie Johnson to go from guard to tackle, that's a problem. The fact that Jeff Saturday may have to have knee surgery after the season and in a perfect world wouldn't be playing now, I don't think that's a huge problem, but that's obviously not great. The Colts are on the precipice to falling off the cliff, but I somehow think that Manning, Dallas Clark, Reggie Wayne, and Gonzalez are going to save their season.
Peter, one of my favorite sayings is, no matter how bad you have it, somebody else always has it worse. And I don't know necessarily if the Colts follow in the category as far as the Patriots are concerned, but who else in the AFC then, no matter how bad the Pats have it, somebody else has it a little bit worse. Who has it worse than the Patriots other than the obvious teams who haven't won yet?
Well, here's the team that I think I've never seen a team in the NFL where a bye came at a better time, and that's the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
Because Ben Roethlisberger, in the previous two games to Sunday night, when they played so impressively in beating Jacksonville, and by the way, what an incredible rivalry that has become. Jacksonville comes to Pittsburgh in December and January last year, whips them both times, and now Pittsburgh goes for a rematch in October down to Jacksonville, and Pittsburgh wins there. You know, it's like... It's like last week, you know, the Red Sox won in Anaheim, and it looked like Anaheim was going to win in Boston. The Angels are going to win in Boston all the games. But I think what has happened to Pittsburgh is that Ben Roethlisberger right now, they've got to be really, really careful. The two games before this, he was knocked down a total of 31 times, either tackled, sacked, hurried, pressured, beat up. I mean, if you're getting knocked down 15 times a game, I mean, you saw what happened in the Super Bowl when Tom Brady went down 23 times.
Yeah, it was ugly.
That's why the Giants won that game.
Sure.
When I saw Ray Lewis in training camp this year, I mentioned in passing, I said, hey, you guys wrote the script, you know, in Baltimore for how to play Tom Brady, because you know how the Ravens are. Mm-hmm. Every blitz you see, it's like a snowflake. Every single one is different. And that's the way the Giants played him. And I think you look at the way the Ravens played Brady, and you look at the way the Ravens rushed Roethlisberger, and I don't know that Ben Roethlisberger is going to be standing for 16 weeks if he keeps getting hit as much as he is.
There are two or three stories concerning off-field issues I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you quickly about. Number one, Pac-Man Jones got into a bit of a scuffle again last night, the Cowboys safety. Joe Flacco was named starter for the Baltimore Ravens, speaking of those Ravens, for the rest of the year. And then, of course, we were already talking about Marvin Harrison, and he's facing a civil lawsuit over that shooting outside of his Philadelphia bar. How do these stories affect the teams, at least in the short term?
Marvin's thing will not affect the team in any way, shape, or form. The guys on that team Marvin barely interacts with them. He's a distant creature. You know, he's not a bad guy to anybody on the team, but nobody on that team knows him, is involved with him. Here's how distant he is from the team.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize Marvin Harrison had the exact same bursa sac surgery last year that Peyton Manning had this year?
You'd think that
these two guys, you know, they're going to go to the Hall of Fame together someday probably. And Peyton Manning never communicated, never even chatted with Marvin Harrison about, hey, what's it like to have that bursa sac surgery? Never talked to him.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't think that will matter. The Joe Flacco thing, that was going to happen eventually.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason it happened now is that Troy Smith had a debilitating virus. A very strange, hard to diagnose virus that he would have started the opener,
mm-hmm.
And he would have played for a while until Flacco was ready. But Flacco's played better than people have thought. So that's that, and the defense has accepted that guy. I know the Ravens pretty well, and their players really like Flacco. They like the fact that he is kind of unyielding. He's a steely guy, so that's not a big deal. Now, to me, the Pac-Man Jones thing, this is trouble. Because, Jerry Jones was telling somebody at the Cowboys yesterday, he said, hey, it doesn't sound like this was an Armageddon-type thing, but Pac-Man is the kind of guy who can't afford to have a cup of coffee spilled on him. And he's in public, and he gets into a fight. Was he tipsy? Had he been drinking? I don't know. They're still investigating this right now. And will the commissioner do something? It was basically Pac-Man Jones had two strikes on him, and he had fouled off the next eight pitches.
Right.
I mean, he had one incident left. Now, my feeling is that Jerry probably will be able to smooth this over, and there will be a phone call from Park Avenue in New York down to Dallas, and the phone call to Pac-Man Jones will basically say, you're the luckiest man in the world because we're not banning you from football for the rest of your life right now, and we're going to give you another chance. But you better be in bed at 8:30 every night. Yeah, and John, you know how this thing happened? You know what happened here that is unbelievable? He's got a bodyguard who travels with him everywhere. He goes to 7-Eleven to get coffee.
Right.
This guy walks in there with him.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And all this guy did at 11 o'clock at night was say, all right, Adam, time to go. And he goes, no, I'm not ready to go. And that's what this argument was over.
Oh my gosh.
This guy was taking him home because his whole thing is he's like a high school junior. He's not allowed out after 11 o'clock. And
wow.
So that's where this problem started. And so, again, as much as you think that the guy should get it, he just hasn't gotten it yet.
I can't get over the fact that Jerry Jones is basically riding on the fact that he has two of these quote-unquote, shall we say, personalities on the same team in him and Owens, and he's banking on these two guys coming through and being model citizens in order to get this team to the, potentially to the Super Bowl again. It just absolutely is fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. It is.
Well, let me bring it back then full circle to the game on Sunday night, and I'm not sure how much of the prep that you've done for the game thus far, but we've kind of touched on it a little bit, and you said already to us that you're really looking forward to the game. What have you been able to find from these two teams heading in that gives you a reason to look forward to this game on Sunday?
Well, because I think there's a bit of an air of desperation by the Chargers. Because if you look at San Diego right now, you look at a team that really has underachieved early on. I mean, they're 2-3. They feel like they should be 4-1 or 5-0. They probably got jobbed out of that game in Denver. They've played poorly a couple other times. And I think you look at them and they're going to say, look, we cannot afford another hiccup. You go 2-4. With the schedule we have down the line, I mean, they got to go to Buffalo. They got to go to London to play the Saints.
Right.
It's just they've got a very, very tough schedule coming up. So even though the Patriots are the Patriots, they just feel like they can't lose at home. And as far as the Patriots go, I mean, it's just these are the type of games that Matt Castle's going to have to win. He's got to win a tough game on the road against a playoff team. You know, everybody is always going to be looking over their shoulders saying, where's Tom, until Matt Castle wins a few of these games that, logic says he's probably not supposed to win.
That's
where
fair.
The drama to me comes in.
Absolutely. I think that's very fair, and I think that's the way most fans around here really kind of look at it. They're like, okay, so Matt's the guy. The coaching staff has already said he's our guy. They, refused, others to come in and work out and what have you. So now it's time to see how he can be the guy. You're right. He's got to start with games like this.
The one other thing about Castle and the reason why I would be very encouraged if I were a Patriots fan, I'm going to name you a few quarterbacks right now, and I'm going to tell you something about it after I name them all.
Okay? All right.
Jay Cutler, mm-hmm. Tony Romo, mm-hmm. Donovan McNabb,
right.
Aaron Rodgers, Philip Rivers, Brett Favre, all those guys who I've named. Take Favre out of there, but all those guys who I've named, Matt Castle's got a higher completion percentage than, And what's important about that and what it tells me is that Matt Cassel is doing at the very least what he absolutely has to do to keep this team on track. He's throwing the ball accurately with, so far, you know, basically in four games, 3 3/4 games, you know, averaging less than one interception per game. If you can continue doing that, you know, if he basically can continue on that path, that is the path to the Patriots being a playoff team. And then you get into January, and who knows?
Yeah, that's right. It's anybody's game. Peter King, again, from NBC, will be a part of the broadcast on Sunday night. And, of course, you can see him in Sports Illustrated, CNNSI.com, and a lot of other great places as well. And you've got him right here inside the playbook today. It's a pleasure to talk to you again, Peter. Thanks so much for spending a little time with us.
Thank you very much, John. You have a great day.
All right, you bet. Will do.
So there you go, kids. Peter King, the one and only. What are your thoughts? Webradio at Patriots.com is how you get to us here on the program. Webradio at Patriots.com. If you'd like to call in, yeah, you can do that. 508-543-7482. Again, it's area code 508 and the number 543-7482. In addition to your comments and what Peter King had to say, and it's wonderful to get a chance to talk to him. We were hoping that at some point in time this year that would happen because he has been a guest prior to this season on Patriots Playbook. And we thought, well, you know, now that he's a part of the NBC broadcast crew, pregame stuff with Bob Costas and Dan and Keith and Collinsworth and all those guys, really, well, then why not? Let's bring him on. Let's see what we can try this week. And so it was wonderful that he could find some time in his schedule for us and for you. And that was good stuff. Always love talking to him. So if you've got some thoughts on his thoughts, great. But also on Thursdays, we need to know how you feel this game is going to play out. Kids, this is going to be a tough sell. This is a tough game. You heard Peter already say he's looking forward to it because it is a special type of a regular season, early season matchup when a team already has its back to the wall in San Diego and a team that's still trying to prove itself with new people in, you know, familiar slots like the Patriots. And who wins this game finds themselves still very much in the mainstream of things in the AFC. Who loses this game, there are big doubts about. And, yes, I do agree with what Andy Hart was saying earlier. I think, you know, it's this as a loss will be worse for the Chargers than it would be for the Patriots going in. And how much more of a spice does this really add to Sunday night's game? I think it adds a lot. So let me know what your breakdown is. Let me know what your score prediction for Sunday night will be. If you think the Pats will win, great. Tell me what the score is and why. If you think the Chargers will hold on, tell me what the score is and why. That's what we do on Thursdays. We try to predict the score of the football game coming up on Sunday night or Sunday afternoon or Monday or whenever the Patriots are playing, and that's what we've got to do here today. Webradio at Patriots.com. That's how you reach us. All right, we're going to take a timeout, come back and feed you full of some notes that we have on the game coming up on Sunday night. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, he will join us in the second hour of the program as well. So this is a good day to get stocked up on football info for the weekend. How much better can it possibly be? Not much. That's at least my opinion, my humble opinion, right here inside the playbook.
And I know ifs and buts are candy and nuts. If they were, we'd all have a great Christmas or whatever that cliche is.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies,
homemade tortilla chips,
everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties,
soccer games,
birthday parties,
baby shower for my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh,
affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tac sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac-A-Tac sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League championship in the history books, the Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Rolling along inside the playbook for a Thursday. Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us here in approximately 10 minutes or so. In the meantime, this game on Thursday night, 8:15 Eastern Time kickoff, on Sunday night rather, 8:15 Eastern Time kickoff at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego. The Patriots, and I'm sure that this has come up in some of the conversation this week, although I'm not sure where specifically. I don't recall mentioning it myself, but maybe the PFW guys did this. The Patriots are putting a mark of 12 straight road victories on the line, and that is the second longest road winning streak in NFL history. That's right. Still got a streak intact. Road wins. Consecutive road wins. In the regular season, 12 in a row. So that is something that they certainly could keep themselves in shape for. And also, should also mention that the Patriots have won 11 consecutive games during the month of October. And that's a streak that dates back to 2005. If you go back even further, since 2003, the Patriots are 20-3 in October games. They swept October in 03. 06, and of course last year as well. So they have a chance now to move it to 12 straight October wins with a win in San Diego on Sunday. And then they'll close out the month with back-to-back home games here against Denver and St. Louis. The Denver game, of course, is a Monday night game. And then St. Louis will get back to the rather normal 1 p.m. Eastern time Sunday starts as well before the end of the month. But I just, you know, again, loving to go inside the numbers, trying to give you a bit of some inside information you may already be aware about, sure, but it helps me kind of stay intact with the game, you know, whenever the game is played, and gives me something to kind of shoot for and to refer back to. You know, it's kind of like when the Patriots win, kind of like, oh yeah, that's right, they kept the winning streak alive. I heard that this week on the website. So that's the kind of stuff we aim at trying to get to here, and just to make things interesting. The Patriots' record is 3-1, obviously going in through the first four games. It is three straight seasons now in which the Patriots have begun the season by winning at least three of their first four games. They did it in each season. Done it each season now since 2006. They're the only team in the NFL, and I find this one a little bit shocking, but they're the only team in the NFL that have won at least three of their first four games in each season since 2006. That's right. That's right. That comes from the Patriots, and at least three of their four since 2006. Shocking.
I mean, you know, you think of all these other, you know, great teams. I mean, Indianapolis had a big streak and everything, yeah, but they're off to a 2-2 start this year. So, anyway, I guess that, you know, again, as I mentioned with Peter King a couple of moments ago, one of my favorite sayings in sport is no matter how bad you have it, somebody else always has it worse. And so this gives you a chance to kind of count your blessings a little bit. And, yeah, certainly things could be better. But you also have some encouragement in thinking that things will be better based on what you've seen. And I said this yesterday. I'll say it again right now. I said this half an hour or so ago, actually a little over that, with Andy Hart during PFW. But quite frankly, I feel better about this team now than I did this time a week ago. I feel better about this team's chances of winning this Sunday night than I did this time a week ago before they embarked on this two-game West Coast road trip. And even though I was fairly confident that they would win the game against San Francisco last week, which of course they did, 30-21, there were just some things in that game I saw that gave me reason to believe that this team is on a learning curve and it's in an upward turn, not a downward turn. I saw enough. If this team can stay close, Steven Gostkowski may be able to carry them, you know, over the rough times, just like Adam Vinatieri did, you know, when this team was just, you know, coming into its own, especially in 2001. Gostkowski could, you know, give them an opportunity to win some games. That's one of the things that I'm convinced of now after watching him again play this last week against San Francisco. The guy's money right now. So you hope that you can ride that a little bit. Let me knock on wood real quick because you want to make sure that you don't jinx anything here. Very superstitious. I think football is the second most superstitious sport behind baseball. I don't know about you, but very superstitious when it comes to things like that. Just always have been, probably always will be. But that part encouraged me. And even though we like to slam on Lawrence Maroney, and I'm certainly guilty of that here as much as anybody, I'm encouraged by the overall depth that the Patriots running backs have right now. I've always liked Sammy Morris. Heck, I liked him at Texas Tech, even though he wasn't all that great a college player. I always thought, though, he had the potential to be a better player, and I think he's realizing that a little bit. Lamont Jordan, if he's healthy, I have no reason to believe he won't be for Sunday, at least at this stage of the game. That's a great 1-2 punch. And Kevin Faulk still gives you that third down option that is very difficult for defenses to defend. And when you don't have a do-it-all kind of guy with speed and power like, you know, Sean Merriman, granted, they've got some good players, but, you know, Giles Tucker's hurt. Sean Phillips, who knows. Here's the thing. His presence will make a defense work and work hard. So I like that versatility. Certainly what we saw from Wes Welker last year, teams have to know that inside middle route and that short, you know, 7-8 yard curl route, that's going to be there, and they've got to defend that. And if they defend that and they put too many guys in the box, then that's going to open things up for guys like Moss and Gaffney down the field. And I'm looking forward, at least we saw it, right? We saw it last week with that 66-yarder to Moss. We saw it. It exists. It's still there. Castle's got the arm to reach him. I'm encouraged by that. So the weapons are all still in place. The one thing about the offense that does concern me is the inconsistency in the offensive line. As Peter King just told us himself, you know what? You know, hey, it was you know, at best a mixed bag when Tom Brady took over for Drew Bledsoe. But by the end of the year, look at what happened. The rest, as they say, is history. Now, we're not saying that, you know, Matt Castle is going to lead this team to the Super Bowl. Could happen. May not happen. But the fact is we have to cut him the slack. We have to give him the benefit of the doubt. We have to give him the chance to improve with this team, to work with this team, to be in game situations with this team. Game is much different than practice. Practice? We're talking practice, right? Where's Al Iverson when we need him?
Practice? Practice?
That's right. Practice.
We're talking about practice, man.
That's exactly right.
Not a game. Practice.
That's right. I love that. That's one of my favorite all-time sound bites from the AI.
I know I'm supposed to be there, but we're talking about practice, man.
And you can't do in practice what you can do in games.
I'm not shoving it aside. Talking about practice, man.
Isn't that great? It's just so quintessential. 21st century athlete, pro athlete. Oh, my goodness. Unbelievable. But you know, in a lot of ways, it's right. You can't replicate in a game what you get in practice and vice versa. You can't do it. And so Matt Cassel needs that time to work with these guys. And I've seen enough where I think that as long as he stays healthy and the offensive line can keep his butt upright, that's the big thing that concerns me right now, then I think this team can continue to improve and can continue to be right where we expect them to be. Defensively, I think that there are more question marks on that side of the football. It all starts with the secondary, even though I've seen enough of Delta O'Neal to think that, you know, he probably will be the guy, although he does scare me from time to time. I don't know about you, but he does scare me. He scared me a little last week on, what was it, one or was it both of those 49er touchdowns they scored early? Scares me. He becomes a much better defensive back if we can get, you know, Richard Seymour to be a much better defensive tackle. I do like the fact that they really switched it up defensively against JT O'Sullivan last week to give him different looks and to throw in nickel and dime packages defensively. You know, they played 3-3-5. They played a 3-2-6. They threw in a bunch of different things, which I thought was creative, yes, and effective as well. I'd love to see that type of thing again, although I'm not so sure the situation will call for it. One thing I know for sure is that the receivers, in theory, should have a tougher time because, I've never been convinced that the receivers for San Diego are among the best. They're good, solid receivers. I don't know that they're among the best. And if Chris Chambers is not able to go, then I'm thinking, well, this only improves the Patriots' chances of being able to kind of tee off a little bit. You know what I'm saying? By the way, Stripper sent an email earlier, and he says, according to the San Diego media here, Chargers may have gotten some good injury news. Wide receiver Chris Chambers was walking normally with his left ankle taped. Better than the prognosis, he said with a smile. Feels better than yesterday, if that's any indication. Chambers' ankle was crushed and rolled in a pile of players after reception at the one-yard line Sunday at Miami. Said he thought he had broken it initially, and the outlook wasn't good Monday for him to play this week. And even Wednesday, he wasn't quite ready to declare himself a go for Sunday. But his quote is, "I'm just walking right now. That's a good thing. As for tomorrow, I'll see when I wake up in the morning." All right, so that's from San Diego Union-Trib. And Strippers, thanks for sending that. So, looks like that could be a game-time decision. Even so, is he 100%? 95%? 85%? Is it good enough to go against the Patriots secondary? Who knows? Peter King told us Vincent Jackson could very well be the key on Sunday night. No doubt about it. And Jackson probably will line up against Delta O'Neal. And because O'Neal is the even though he's a veteran, he's the newbie for the Patriots. And he's the one liable to get picked on. Obviously, I think, Ellis Hobbs will get picked on a little bit, but Hobbs, may not be working against Chambers on that side of the ball. I'm not sure who actually get the start, if not Chambers. Buster Davis, someone like that, maybe? Legadu Nani, I'm not sure who gets the start. But at this stage of the game, you know, Hobbs may be catching a bit of a break, which is why I think guy like Jackson on O'Neal may be the key matchup to watch, looking at it from a defensive perspective on Sunday. So that's one thing. If O'Neal can somehow, hold his own there, then the Patriots will be at least in better shape than I give him credit for right now. I'm just not sold on LaDainian Tomlinson being done. I think Tomlinson, even though he's got the toe injury, even though he has not performed yet up to the capabilities to which we have seen him perform in previous years. Maybe it's the injury. Maybe it's his age at 29. Who knows? I think that he's going to be, I think he's going to be a thorn in their side, okay? I just think Tomlinson's not done. If the Patriots can hold Tomlinson down, it's a huge bonus. But the X factor here is Darren Sproles. And even though I do think they missed, Michael Turner, no doubt about it, Sproles has tried to fill that role and seems to have done so pretty effective. They will find more ways to get him the ball. Sproles has had a couple of big returns and a couple of big plays against the Patriots in the past. Sproles is a hard guy to catch up to, much less bring down. There's one guy that you got to keep in front of you, and when you get a hold of him, you'd better hold on. Because even at 5'6", he's got legs that are just, trying to tackle a Mack truck. That'll be the key. I think basically limiting touches to Darren Sproles if they can. And when he does get the touches, limit his yak. Limit his yards after the catch or yards, after contact. Either way, that will be key. Force Phillip Rivers to try to put this team on his shoulders with a less than healthy Gates, if Gates does indeed go at tight end. Could be Brandon Manumaleanu. Could be. And he's had a couple of, nice plays and catches against the Patriots in the recent past as well. I'm sure many of you will recall. I think this is just going to boil down to intensity and who wants it more. Plain and simple. Intensity and who wants it more. I'll stick by my original prediction. I'm giving you all this pro-Patriot stuff here. And I want you to tell me what you think about the game. It's time for you to come through now with your score predictions for Sunday night. Webradio@patriots.com. Fire it off. Let's go. Get with it. I know you're out there. I know you're listening. Take the time to send the score. Let me know where you're calling from or where you're writing from. What's the score and why do you think the team will win, whichever team you're picking? I'm going to say right now, and I hate to do it. I absolutely hate to do it because I've been so positive on the Patriots thus far today. But just because of the desperation factor, and sometimes I just don't think you could measure that. But just because of the desperation factor, I'm going to say Chargers 24, Patriots 22. Now, that would mean that the Patriots would cover for those that like to play that game. It would also mean that the Patriots, if they by some chance can have the football last, potentially, you got a chance to drive down the field and let Steven Gostkowski win it. Potentially. That's what I'm thinking could happen on Sunday night. This game could go down to the end, but maybe San Diego plays a little keep away at the end and never gives the Pats a chance to drive down the field, get the football back and win it. Or maybe for some reason Matt Cassel can't get the team down the field or get Gostkowski in position to win it. Anything's possible, I suppose. But I'm thinking right around that 24, 22, somewhere in that variety.
Yoo-hoo!
That means we found him, right?
Baxter!
Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator, joins us here inside Patriots Playbook. Good afternoon, Russell.
Hello, John. I don't know if I can do this show just the two of us anymore. So,
well, everybody's off on the left coast. They're soaking up the sun.
What
a gig.
I hope I
not played just the two of us for an intro for Russell yet.
No, you haven't done that, have you? He's going to try to find it now.
All right. What a gig out there. How come you're not out there? I mean, there's never a bad time to go to San Diego.
No, it really isn't. No.
Never.
No, I'm not important enough to get out there just yet. So that's
well,
all right.
They sent you to Tampa.
Yeah, well, but that was for a college football game,
Tampa, San Diego. Yeah, that's a correlation.
Yeah, I suppose. So. I suppose.
If they send you to Tampa in February, then it'll be better.
Believe me. Well, actually, I will get to go for some college basketball in February. So.
Oh, there you go. So. Well, and just in case the Patriots decide to make another Super Bowl appearance, that's where the game is this year.
That would be, yeah, that's always a bonus, right?
Right.
Always a bonus. So what were your thoughts on the Patriots and the San Francisco 49ers last week? And I have been telling the fans this week, Russell, that frankly I feel better about the team now than I did this time a week ago. It doesn't necessarily mean that I think that they'll win this Sunday, but I just saw enough to where I think that there is hope that this team can continue to improve and be where they want to be, say, this time in the middle of December.
Sometimes the simplest things work best. And, how many times have we watched a football game where, we think in the back of our minds, two things. If somebody goes long, and even if you don't complete the pass, it at least gives you the impression they're going to go long.
Yeah.
Maybe later that day.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you almost think, if you have a mobile quarterback on the first play of the game, let him run up the middle of the field for 30 yards,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of keeps the defense on its heels the whole time. Well, after watching Matt Cassel not really attempt a long ball, per se, in his first couple of starts, now I know he threw a long pass to Randy Moss you know, when he came in for Tom Brady. But as far as the game plan went, you know, we got to see a little of what we saw last year, only with Tom Brady, of course, at quarterback and so on, and that was the long pass to Randy Moss. And that makes a big, big difference. I think that kind of loosened the Patriots up. You know, I know they still had a little problem with pass protection when it comes to Matt Castle, but that's, I think that's less about the offensive line and more about the inexperience of Matt,
mm-hmm.
Per se. I mean, they've given up a lot more sacks this year already, 4 more sacks the last 3 games. You know, that's not by coincidence. You know, Tom Brady, I know he was sacked 5 times in the Super Bowl, but he's only sacked, they only gave up 21 sacks in the regular season all last year. So, you know, that's, you know, sometimes sacks is a deceiving number because, you know, as soon as you give up a lot of sacks, everybody starts pointing offensive line. That's not always the case. But, you know, I think the Patriots, you know, they had 2 weeks to get ready for this game. The Niners are obviously improved, but not in the Patriots class right now. I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like old times. It's Mike Martz against Bill Belichick. We've seen them in a few important games.
Very true. And Mike Martz was never able to keep his offense on the field long enough. The Patriots did a masterful job of playing keep away.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they took advantage of what San Francisco doesn't do well. And it wasn't one of those games where San Francisco or a Mike Martz offense. You know, sometimes we forget Mike Nolan's actually the head coach anytime Mike Martz is around somewhere, just like Rod Marinelli in Detroit. But it wasn't the usual, you know, 8 carries for 9 yards rushing. It wasn't the usual, you know, 5 or 6 turnovers sometimes and giving up a whole load of sacks. I think J.T. O'Sullivan was actually only sacked once in the game. This was more the Patriots doing a good job of them holding on to the football in terms of the short passing game, mixing it up with the long passing game, getting enough from the running game and so on. Just very well orchestrated game plan by Bill Belichick and company.
Absolutely. So Patriots now get to move to 3-1. They're tied in the loss column now with Buffalo because Buffalo lost for the first time as well. And, you know, even though Buffalo has a bye this week, you know, I think we've seen enough from Buffalo at least at this early stage to know that they're improved. You certainly have to say that Miami's improved. How about Miami? And I know this one probably dawned on you as soon as that game was over last week against the Chargers, that Miami in the last 2 games has beaten the 2 teams in last year's AFC Championship game.
Yeah, I mean, as we were sitting up there in the room and so on, it just shows you what, you know, John, what a funny league it is.
That's bizarre.
Last year, this team finally won a game and beat Baltimore. Took them overtime to win their only game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then after an 0-2 start, here they come and they beat the last 2 teams, like you said, in the AFC Championship game. And kudos to that whole staff down there. And that's why, I probably do this editorial at least 3 or 4 times a year. Don't give me easy schedules. Don't look at who you got to play down the road and so on. This league is totally unpredictable. The hardest games for teams to win, and Miami's going to be in that position this week, John,
yep,
is winning the games you're expected to win.
Right.
And that's when you start separating who the really good teams are, because I don't care. They don't have to win by 20, but win the games you're expected to win and then hold your own in the games that are, you know, toss up or you're not expected to win. And that's how you get to the playoffs.
All right.
Staying consistent and so on. And, that's why Miami this week will be very intriguing to watch them play Houston this week.
Yep, that's very true. All right, let's take a look then at the schedule. Let's just start with that one because Miami is at Houston, and I never thought, at least anytime soon, that I would see Miami as a road favorite, but they've been favored by 2 or 3 points throughout the course of this week at Houston, Houston being one of the few winless teams still left in the league. Is this the week that Houston gets there first, or is Miami for real?
Well, this is really intriguing because I think Houston got its first win last week with after 55 minutes.
Yes, they did, didn't they?
Okay.
Oh, my God. What an implosion. What an implosion.
You know, it's funny. You know, and John, I know you remember this game because it's one of the most famous Monday night games ever. When the Colts were down in Tampa, down 35-14 with about 4.5 left.
Yes.
And then put all, it was more like an offensive flurry that did that. This was, I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
First Peyton, Tom Santee, rookie tight end, he hits for a touchdown. Then Sage Rosenfels does a Brett Favre imitation, and I don't fault him for that. He's trying to win the game, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Up in the air, ball comes out, Gary Brackett runs it back. Then Sage Rosenfels rolls out to the left. Maybe he should roll to the right. And all of a sudden, Robert Mathis, strip, as soon as the strip came, you know the Colts were going to find a way to get the ball.
Right.
And then Reggie Wayne with one of the more incredible grabs that you will ever see in the left side of the end zone. And then Rosenfels caps it off with an interception. And, boy, what an afternoon. You want to talk about what could have been a huge win for Houston just to get them off the schneid. It only been the second time they ever beat the Colts. And for the Colts just to get back to 500, and suddenly, you know, vault a little because Jacksonville lost Sunday night. You know, I mean, the Titans are hopefully not running away from anybody in the division, but that was, what an amazing set of events. And we've already talked about Miami, but here's the caveat.
Yep.
As strange as it sounds, the Miami Dolphins have never beaten the Houston Texans, and it's not just once. It's three times, including the last 2 years.
Wow.
0-3. And I'll tell you what I'm looking for here is a battle of ones. Jake Long was the first pick in the draft this season from Michigan, as you well know.
Right.
2 years ago, Mario Williams was the first pick in the draft.
Right.
From North Carolina State. They will go head-to-head. The
good
left
matchup.
Tackle and the right defensive end.
Yeah, good matchup.
That's what I'm looking for. I mean, Mario had two more sacks last week. You know, maybe him and Reggie Bush are both going to turn out to be pretty good players, going 1-2 and 2-6. But this is one of the games that Miami is expected to now to win, given their success. And in this craziness of the league, you wouldn't be surprised if Houston did knock them off. This one's tough to call because, you know, the excitement of a young football team like Miami coming off their two wins and now going on the road. I'm just going to lean a little toward Houston because I really don't think they're as bad as they've been, even though they regularly this year have given up 30 points in all four of their games.
Yeah, I would kind of tend to agree that if there's ever a week for Houston to you know, prove themselves worthy, I think this might be a week because I'm not sold on Miami. It may take another 3 or 4 weeks for a lot of us, at least here, you know, in the Patriots corner, to be sold on Miami, even though, by all rights, we probably should be sold on what they did a couple of weeks ago here in Foxborough. But you know what? I think that people still look at that game as still being a little bit flukish.
Well, yeah, because I think people look at that game more as game plan.
Yeah, right.
Because of what they did or anything like that. And kudos for them pulling it off. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to shortchange what Miami has done, but now comes the more interesting thing. When once you start knocking off people, is how are you expected now to do when you're expected to knock off people? I mean, Miami, you know, we just assumed that they were going to pick up where they left off. We knew they'd be better. Okay,
can't get much worse, right?
Much worse. Yeah. But you also knew, given the regime down there now with a Bill Parcells and so on, Jeff Ireland, you know, more Parcells. Let's not kid anybody. You attach Bill Parcells to something, as the people in New England well know. Okay, you bring instant credibility. Okay, so I mean, listen, the Dolphins could still finish 2-14, but I think they just have shown. I think the term we've used on the air here at ESPN is they look like more like a professional football team. And that's and their defense, by the way, has really, really played well. Pretty much, you know, they got lit up in the first two games in the secondary. Their defensive backs looked like they were turned the wrong way a lot of times. They really got lit up with Anquan Boldin up in Arizona, and now they're getting some pass rush from a young defensive line. Who would have thought it? No more Jason Taylor, and all of a sudden they're able to make some plays on the defensive line. They're playing really good run defense as well. Intriguing club, but maybe for another time.
Yeah.
But because Houston, chalk it up for whatever you want. Now, Miami wins that game, this game, maybe we'll start talking that they're going to be more than a little interesting and so on, but
yep.
I'm going to take Houston for now.
Buffalo, as we mentioned, has the week off this week, and the Jets are at home against the Cincinnati Bungles. Is it safe to call them Bungles again?
Well, 0-5, their worst start since before Marvin Lewis was there. Yeah, I guess you have to. You know, they have shown some. It's interesting. They've shown some life in losses. They did
against the Cowboys
overtime.
They did against the Cowboys again last week.
And the Cowboys last week, it looked like the Cowboys were going to run away from them, and Cincinnati hung in there and so on. You know, the Jets. You know, I think the jury's still out on them as well. I know they lit up Arizona for 56 points 2 weeks ago and so on, but I also saw them give up 48 to the San Diego Chargers as well. So.
Right.
They're kind of hit and miss as well. And, you know, defensively, I don't think the Jets are great. And I think, don't be surprised if Cincinnati is able to move the football. And don't be surprised, John, if you see a little more Cedric Benson What a league.
Wow.
More than Chris Perry. Chris Perry has already fumbled five times in five games and lost three of them. There has to be a little concern there. He's, you know, a former first-round pick who came into the league a few years ago, has spent a lot of time being injured, and now that he's playing, he's having trouble hanging on to the football. So believe it or not, don't be surprised if you see a little more Cedric Benson. I think the Jets probably find a way to win the game, but I won't be surprised if Cincinnati goes in there and beats them.
Okay. A couple of other games that I think will certainly bear watching. Baltimore playing at Indianapolis, and both teams are 2-2. The Colts, obviously, they pulled the Houdini against Houston last week. Baltimore still intrigues me. Tough defense, and maybe when Joe Flacco, who officially got the nod for the rest of the season, today, in fact, by the Ravens, once he has his time underneath him, maybe along the lines of how the Patriots are trying to nurture Matt Castle a little bit, bring him along a little bit. The Ravens could be dangerous by the end of the year, but are they dangerous now?
Well, listen, their defense, they just got done playing two really, really physical football games, the Monday nighter at Pittsburgh and then came home and really seemed like they were going to pull one out against Tennessee, and Tennessee made a late drive and that was it. But listen, in four games, they haven't given up a touchdown on the ground this year. Their defensive unit, John, has only given up three touchdowns in four games. Their offensive unit has given up two.
Yep.
On fumbles,
yeah.
Costly fumble in the Monday night game against Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago. The Colts, though, well, defense is kind of a four-letter word for them right now, especially when it comes on the ground. They're giving up almost 190 yards a game on the ground.
Wow.
Which is astounding. We really thought this kind of defense had solved itself. Now, I know there's no Bob Sanders and so on. They're, as usual, they're a little shorthanded, but, right. I mean, they're not really getting ball control from their own running game. These are numbers that probably don't mean all that much when I say them the way I say them, but the Colts have only run for 271 yards in four games this year.
Mm.
Okay? So that's less than 70 yards a game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They've given up 754. Okay? So they're getting outrushed almost 3-1 on an annual basis and so on. Peyton Manning has somehow found a way to win two games. Not at home, by the way. How strange is this? The Colts, including the playoffs, have lost their last four home games.
That's
their
strange.
Last two at the RCA Dome, of course, the playoff game to San Diego.
That's bizarre.
And this, yes, and to Chicago on Sunday night, and of course that heartbreaker to Jacksonville a couple of weeks ago as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of need to get the ship righted here. But every time I see this matchup, I always giggle because it's Baltimore at Colts,
mm-hmm.
which...
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's just funny. I mean, this is the 25th year, by the way, of the Colts beat now.
Have they been gone that long?
Yeah, 1984 was the first year.
Wow.
Hard to believe.
It is hard.
Baltimore's defense is tough. The Colts are going to need their, just like Pittsburgh did a couple weeks ago, where their pass rush was able to harass Joe Flacco. That's what the Colts need to do with Dwight Freeney, with Robert Mathis. A blitz on occasion. They need to force the young quarterback into mistakes. You know, last year the Colts lit them up in Baltimore on a Sunday night, but this defense is a lot more healthier than it was a year ago. And given the Colts' offensive line problems, you know, this is going to be tough. I mean, this is going to be a real tough game. And it's a somewhat of a turning point game for both of these teams. Baltimore, I'm sure, would hate to go three straight losses after winning their first two games, but I get the feeling that's what might happen.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking so too. Jacksonville, you mentioned them just a short while ago. Jacksonville had such a tough game with Pittsburgh, game that they physically, I thought, certainly had things in hand and ended up losing the game. And now they have to go on the road and play Denver. Denver seems to be the Jekyll Hyde team, offense, defense, all offense, no defense, good home team. What do we know about them on the road? I mean, they're 1-1 so far. Jacksonville, though, might have to play a little bit more, sense of urgency here at 2-3 going in, and can they pull it off in Denver?
Well, yeah, and let's not forget they went into Denver last year and beat the Broncos,
mm-hmm.
and when the Broncos were 2-0
after
they had gotten off to a good start and so on. But, you know, watching them play against Pittsburgh, even though they had the lead in the game, they got outgained by over 200 yards. In that game, the last 2 weeks, Jacksonville's defense, even against Houston, who they beat in overtime, teams, you know, kind of moving the ball up and down the field on them. And I know they've got some guys hurt in the secondary right now. Reggie Nelson, very underrated free safety, former first round pick, has been out. They had a corner in there, William James, who used to be William Peterson, who's kind of been a journeyman around the league. They wound up pulling him out of the game. He struggled so much last week. But, you know, Denver, you hit the nail on the head. Denver is very Jekyll and Hyde. You know, one week the defense shows up and the offense doesn't. Then the offense shows up and the defense doesn't. You know, Jacksonville has to be careful here to not get themselves headed in a spiral. You know, they only lost five games all last year, lost here, and they'd already be at four.
Right.
And in that, I'm telling you, the Colts, I mean, the Titans, whether you think they're pretty or not, they are 5-0. And if you keep on digging yourselves holes, like Jacksonville has, I mean, like, Jacksonville has to be careful of, they could finally find themselves three or four games out of first place before the midway part of the season. But unfortunately, I think Denver's passing game is going to give them a lot of problems, just like Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh passing game gave them a lot of problems. They're not getting an enormous amount of heat on the quarterback like they expected to. And I think Jacksonville's in trouble here. I got to lean toward Denver.
All right, I got three NFC games, Russell, that to me are kind of a toss-up here in terms of how interesting could they be, how good could they be, what's my draw into any one of these games. And I want you to pick what you think will be the best game of the three. Chicago-Atlanta, at Atlanta, both teams 3-2. Carolina at Tampa. Carolina's 4-1, Tampa 3-2. And Dallas at Arizona, and Arizona's also 3-2, Cowboys 4-1. Which game is going to be the best?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll put them all into I'll put them into three different categories.
Okay.
But then I'll pick the one we're going to talk about.
All right.
I think the most intriguing game is Chicago and Atlanta, because someone there is going to be 4-2, and if it's Atlanta, they'll already match what they did a year ago in terms of wins.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most important game is Carolina at Tampa Bay, divisional game,
right.
And Carolina off to a great start. It goes into Tampa, which it sounds like we might be back to Jeff Garcia this week.
Yeah.
Instead of Brian Greasy and so on. But as far as importance go, and Carolina's had Tampa's number as of late. They've beaten them 8 of the last 10 times. But I think the most entertaining game is obviously Dallas and Arizona. And I'll be very intrigued to find out how the Cowboys' secondary, which is not, and their defense has not played well as of late, how they handle a passing attack that's as good as any, even without Anquan Boldin out.
Which I find surprising.
You know, Steve Breston, who's more of a punt returner, you know, they're getting the ball to Edger and James enough. Larry Fitzgerald, who's just as a touchdown machine, just finds his way to get into the end zone. Now, of course, it depends also what version of Kurt Warner is going to show up. Is it going to be 6 turnover Kurt Warner, or is it going to be 4 touchdown pass Kurt Warner? That's what you'd be. But, you know, speaking of turnovers, just interesting thing as I was looking. Had a dynamic career, early career to date. Tony Romo, going back to last year, John, has thrown at least one interception in each of his last 9 games, including the playoffs.
Wow.
He just seems to make one or two of those goofs a game. Doesn't throw a ton of them. I mean, we go back to the Buffalo Monday night game last year. He threw 5 and still managed to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll just throw one all of a sudden. And you guys kind of scratch your heads like it used to be like Drew Bledsoe was early in his career, where you kind of look and say, where is that going? Or who's he throwing to? And that just seems to happen with Tony every once in a while. But, I mean, Dallas has got an awful lot of weapons. But, you know, Arizona's defense, obviously, any team that gives up 6 touchdown passes is pretty vulnerable. We have seen some wild games this year, most of them on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
This shapes up as the wild game of the week.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And I'm kind of looking forward to Dallas and Arizona. Let me talk then about Monday Night Football, as long as you brought up the phrase Monday Night, because you guys game on Monday night as the Giants at Cleveland. Now, just on the surface of things, you'd have to say mismatch. But, you know, Cleveland is 1-3. They want to try to claw back into this. They'll be at home. They'll have the intensity. They'll have the cameras. They'll have, you know, the talk all about them. Is it possible that they are not as bad as they have played this year, that they're actually closer to the team that won 10 games a year ago? And, you know, do they have enough to be able to derail New York? Because right now, for me and for my tastes anyway, New York probably has the most complete team top to bottom at this stage of the season.
Well, first thing I'll ask you, John, is are they going to bring any better players with those cameras?
It's going to take that, huh?
Yeah, I think it is. Well, defensively, listen, they've been a very early disappointment. You know, they spent – well, remember, they didn't have a draft pick, first, second, and third with all their trades. You know, the Brady Quinn was the first pick that they forfeited a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Corey Williams, they gave up a second-round pick to the Packers. Sean Rogers, they gave up a third-round pick, and cornerback Lee Bodden to the Lions. So, that you know, they really thought they had shored up their defense. But their defense has been eh. It's had its moments. It also has had its bad moments and so on. But offensively, what has happened to this football team? And I'm just going to be curious to see how much patience Romeo Crennel truly has with Derek Anderson. I'm not saying he's the cause necessarily. But he really has kind of fallen a little on hard times, even late last year. I hearken back to the game against the Bengals last year where, you know, they're one of those classic, well, they should win this game and it'll get them in the playoffs. And he winds up throwing four interceptions. And I don't know if there's a lack of confidence on his part. I know one thing. He has zeroed in on Braylon Edwards this year. Braylon Edwards is amongst the league leader in dropped passes. So that's not – if you're zeroing in on a guy, which he shouldn't be anyways, a quarterback, and the guy you're zeroing in on can't hang on to the football, that's the problem as well.
Here's a guy that was named Pro Bowl last year over a guy like Wes Welker, too. And then, well, I remember having the conversation a year ago that, you know, how can you not take Braylon Edwards and, you know, and how can you take Wes Welker? And I just, you know, I look at consistency, and I realize that, you know, Edwards may be having a tougher year, but consistency to me is the key whether or not a guy is a legitimate big-time player or not.
Yeah, and he's – listen, you're right. He had a dynamic year. He put up big touchdown numbers and stuff, but we've rarely seen him this year where he was effective and so on. And that's a problem for a team that, you know, is really kind of looking for another wide receiver. I know they have Kellen Winslow. I know they have Jamal Lewis in the backfield. But I think, listen, no Joe Jurevicius this year because he's been hurt and on the PUP list. Dante Stallworth, who was another guy who they signed in the offseason, mm-hmm. former Patriot, former
right.
Eagle, former
right.
Saint, former everybody, has not been available yet as well. That has hurt them as well. But I don't think that's as much the problem as that they just seem like, and just my own observation, they seem like they've lost confidence on offense. And I don't know if they're waiting for a spark, and I don't know if Brady Quinn is going to be the spark. Sometimes these things have a way of working out. But here's the bigger problem Monday night. They're playing the defending Super Bowl champions who have not picked up where they left off. They look better than where they left off last year.
They do.
And, you know, it's funny. You know, I had this discussion with some people. You go back in history and you look at teams that won the Super Bowl and kind of surprised you. A wild card team like the 97 Broncos, the 74 Steelers, to a degree the 92 Cowboys who had to upset San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
You go one or two ways. You either can be like the Steelers in 05 where they had a forgettable year with Ben Roethlisberger and all his off-field problems with the motorcycle accident, or you can take that surprising success and build it into something. And you remember the 97 Broncos, the 98 Broncos won their first 13 games and were better. The 75 Steelers repeated. I mean, with the 74, the 75, they won back-to-back Super Bowls, as did the Cowboys. The Cowboys in 93 lost their first two games, became the first 0-2 team to win because they didn't have Emmitt Smith. I think that's what you see with the Giants. And even with other personnel they've either lost to retirement, to injury, or they've traded, I think they are now a very confident football team, and the quarterback is supremely confident. And I'll tell you an aspect of that team that nobody talks about, and we don't talk a lot about them around the league as well. Their offensive line, John, is absolutely lights out.
Yeah.
The continuity there, and don't forget, Tom Coughlin always, always had a good offensive line in Jacksonville. Okay, with Tony Boselli and company, he always put a big onus on that. Last year, one of the things I love to chart is offensive line continuity. Same five guys, 16 games, starting in the same five spots. Only one team did it the whole regular season last year, John. That was the New York Giants.
Giants, right, yeah.
And they got in the playoffs, and I know Sean O'Hara missed the first playoff game against Tampa because of the injury in the Patriots Saturday night game. But they basically kept that line together the entire year. And the line is not five number one picks. A line is continuity, and their line has got a lot of continuity right now.
I think that it's it all goes to the fact that if something goes wrong on the line, Tom Coughlin can go to his son-in-law and say, okay, You guys can't step it up a little bit.
You know, well, right.
I'm not because, claiming you anymore.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're out of my will. You're out of everything. You know, so listen, there can be no better motivation than that, I guess.
I suppose that is the case. I always kind of wondered, though, for Chris Snee, for those that don't know, is Tom Coughlin's son-in-law, and Chris played at Boston College when I was doing the Eagles games there, and I always wondered, since he was dating Tom Coughlin's daughter all the time, how he wasn't, you know, just a little bit, you know, like, afraid. Especially, you know, when, you know, it was kind of, he had to break the news that, you know, hey, by the way, we're having a child here. And but apparently Tom really likes Chris Snee and obviously likes his offensive line a heck of a lot as well.
Yeah, they're, like I said, they've become a very confident football team. And, you know, listen, it's going to be a very fired up, exciting crowd. I mean, we ESPN have the Browns on Monday Night Football 3 times this year.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been on Monday Night Football 5 years. They haven't hosted a game in 5 years. That's going to be a really, really dynamic crowd. And you, as you well know, as good a football team as you are, a couple miscues, lack of concentration, a couple early fumbles. The Giants haven't turned over the ball, by the way, in their last 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the home team's up 14-0. It can get away from you real, real quick.
Got to be careful. That's right.
And you got to be careful.
That's right. All right, then let's get to the Patriots at the Chargers, which is the Sunday night game. And, you know, I get the sense, and this is what we've kind of danced around all week long, that even though that there still is some, I don't want to say ill will, but let's just say, the players on these two teams, in particular Nick Hardwick and Richard Seymour, they don't like each other, don't care for each other too much. And I don't know if that will really have any kind of a factor in Sunday night. But suffice it to say, San Diego is probably, in fact, I'm not even going to say probably, they are more desperate in this game than the Patriots, and that in and of itself may be enough to get them over the hump. That's what I think.
Well, listen, San Diego Chargers aren't playing very good football right now.
No, they're not.
I mean, I think that's what people forget. I mean, if they're counting on their emotion and all that revenge type of stuff, which, you know, they had a couple chances last year and didn't get it done, then, you know, listen, you know, revenge doesn't work. Revenge works on certain fronts, okay? You know, like getting back at your son-in-law. Okay?
but revenge is overrated.
Yes, if you're worried about, it's one of my favorite lines from the Super Bowl many, many years ago. Jim Turner talking about how they lost the Broncos kicker, who lost to the Cowboys in the Super Bowl XII. We were worried about winning; they were worried about football.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the San Diego Chargers need to do. But more so, they need their defense to worry about some football. Their defense has really disappointed. And I know Sean Merriman is not there. I know Jamal Williams is banged up as well. But, boy, this has been, you know, I hear a lot of people saying, John, you know, I'm sure you've heard this too. Well, they started out slow last year. They were 1-3. Okay, they'll get it together. Well, last year, the reason they started out slow, according to everybody, was we have a new coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a new coaching staff this year. You know, they're a team coming off an AFC Championship game appearance where you would think that they would be confident. And again, they're a little banged up. You know, there are a lot of teams that banged up, and I still see them managing to win football games. I'm not sure what the mix is there, but San Diego, and if Denver keeps on winning, San Diego is going to, listen, I know they got a bad break in week two. I'm not discounting that. But they didn't get a bad break last week. Miami was able to run the football against them. They didn't get a bad break against Carolina, who drove down the field against them late. This San Diego team is a bit of a conundrum right now. And, you know, if New England's going out there and worrying about winning, they'll win. I expect San Diego to play with an air of desperation.
Yeah.
I also will be curious to see if the things don't go their way early, of how they handle things, John. Meaning the Chargers.
Okay.
Okay, you start second-guessing yourself, especially against a team that's kind of had your number a little. And I know San Diego's had some good moments against the Patriots, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years. They went into Foxborough, you know, 3 years ago and ended their home winning streak and so on. But, you know, I go back to that playoff game 2 years ago. San Diego either outthought themselves or played some really stupid football in that game, as you well know. Miscues here, not paying attention here. I mean, they really played some bizarre football, and that game got away from them. And all of a sudden, You know, I don't think they've, in a sense, even though they got to the AFC Championship game last year,
right,
in some ways, I don't think they ever they recovered from that golden moment of maybe getting to a Super Bowl.
Hmm. Well, it's possible.
Everything's been an uphill climb for them ever since.
Sure, sure.
You know, last year, remember, they were 5-5 at midseason.
That's right.
And got hot late.
Yeah, they did.
And stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this year they're off 2-3. And with Denver sitting at 4-1 and a loss to them already, they got to be very, very careful. You can't keep on digging yourselves holes and say, well, I've done this before, we can do it again.
Well, that's exactly why, Russell, I kind of feel like San Diego has the edge here, only because they face, you know, road games at Buffalo, and then they got to go to London to play the Saints. And who knows what will happen there? And this one being at home, I just think that, you know, they've got to realize that, you know what, we can't dig ourselves any more of a hole than we've already dug. And I kind of look for, you know, them to really open it up and try to pick on the Patriots secondary as best as they possibly can.
Well, but that, and that's exactly my point, John. I'm agreeing with you, although it doesn't sound like it. I think, I exactly think that way. Whether they take advantage of it or not
is another matter,
is
right?
What,
yeah.
I'm going to be curious about the mindset of the San Diego Chargers.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
It's one thing to have the cards. It's another thing to, you know, put two aces down and stick with the hand and stuff. They should have all the advantages here. But they had all those advantages a couple years ago in the playoff game as well and found a way. And that's the thing about the Chargers sometimes. You scratch your helmet figuring out how they lost games. And so on. I mean, they're supremely talented. As we know in this league, supremely talented doesn't guarantee anything.
That's very true. I think we kind of learned that last February.
That's exactly right. We learn that lesson on a weekly basis.
We all do, don't we?
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Russell, that's a great wrap-up. I sure appreciate the time, as always. What are you looking forward to most this weekend? What are you looking forward to doing besides working on Sunday?
Oh, well, I mean, the hardest thing I have to do is get up and get, you know, and more broccoli, you know, when I'm watching the games and stuff like
more
that.
Broccoli?
More
broccoli?
Well, you got to mix in, the good stuff with the...
How about maybe you'd say another bag of chips or maybe...
No,
you know,
no. We've had enough bags of chips. We're carrying bags of chips constantly, if you know what I mean,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, that's true.
But, no, you know, the weather up here is starting to get a little chilled. It's unfortunately, I don't have time on a Saturday night to even get in 9 holes of golf, unfortunately, but... On a football type note, and actually not a NFL type note, I'm actually kind of looking forward to Oklahoma and Texas playing this week.
Yes, well,
I think that'll be kind of interesting.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I'm one of those old school guys. When you know, I still remember when Oklahoma versus USC was kind of a fun thing to watch about 20 years ago.
Yeah, you're going.
But Oklahoma, Texas, you always know it's going to be interesting.
It's usually about Thursday that I start getting my sweaty palms, and it happens every year
for
Texas OU week. And sure enough, I got them today, so I know that the game is right around the corner. I in all honesty, I think it shapes up to be a pretty good matchup. I don't have a lot of faith in my Longhorns, unfortunately.
Well, the funny thing is also is. I also, of course, remember when it was Oklahoma, Texas, and there was a lot of running of the football.
Yeah.
Now these are teams that, you know, that whole conference has obviously changed as far as throwing the football.
Big 12, by the way? And I think Big 12 from top to bottom, you know, you got to kind of throw Baylor out of the mix, I think. But I think Big 12 is pretty strong. I think it rivals the SEC this year.
Yeah, the Big 12, you know, it's funny. The Big 12 is almost like a different kind of version of the WAC sometimes. In terms of
physical whack.
Yeah, physical whack. That's exact. Oh my God, physical whack. I think there's some marketing potential.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what the.
But it's true. But
that's
it's
what
true.
The Big 12 like, wants to market themselves as.
It's true. But it is true because it's kind of bigger guys.
Yeah.
But this more. I mean, when Oklahoma and Nebraska used to play, you know, you almost got the sense, you know, 20-something years ago that the first team that scores a touchdown is going to win the game.
Right, right.
Okay? That's always so different now in that entire conference.
Yeah, that's – I will put it this way. I will be sequestered in my studio basement, you know, where I do a lot of my radio work now.
Yeah.
And the family knows that they cannot enter the room. In fact, they're going to get out of the house.
Right.
And we're going to pull the shutters down. We're going to pretend like, you know, the car will be in the garage. The dog will be nowhere to be found because I will want to kick the dog if things go bad. And I really don't want to put myself in a position to even want to think that. So I will be, you know, sequestered, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens. I hope nothing gets destroyed.
Just make sure you have someone slide the meals under the door.
That's exactly.
Which I would prefer pizza, because chicken has a tendency to get caught on the runner.
Yeah, that's also true. Very good point. Good tip. Good football game watching tip. By
chicken
you.
Under the door. Give you a better net.
Yeah, I love it. Did you find the theme song for him, Gary? Here we go, Russell.
Oh, how romantic.
Well, you're the one that brought up just the two of us.
That's true. That's very true. I hear songs like that, and I'm starting to think about Mike Greenberg and Chad Pennington together.
Yeah, that gets a little ugly from time to time when I hear him talk about it. So,
unfortunately, you know, Greeny's got Brett now. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, he does. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. Great to visit with you as always. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, John.
Thanks, buddy.
You too.
You got it. There you go. Just the two of us. Thanks, Gary. All right. Well, all right, let's take a break then, shall we? Let's do that. Let's take a break here and let Qdoba get its 2 cents worth in again, since they've supplied the grub again today. Thank God we got them around here, right?
What do I love at Qdoba?
Absolutely. And then we'll come back and we've got conference calls with the San Diego Chargers. LaDainian Tomlinson and Norv Turner. Straight ahead, inside the playbook.
Not for those who wait too late. We got to go for all we know. Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar,
the hot nacho bar,
the hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League championship in the history books, the Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack started just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor 12 and
pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
what we're trying to give you here inside the playbook. A little afternoon delight. Not that kind, of course. Gary's very proud of himself because he was in here kind of house cleaning from PFW. By the way, those guys leave this place a pit. What a pit this place is around here. Anybody know how to house clean? I would hate to be their wives. Oh, my God. Anyway, Gary's doing some house cleaning and at the end of the commercial. And so he's rushing in there and he gets there just in time to play the bumper music back into the program. You know, that is absolute. You don't get a chance to see this in person, but I want you to know I'm going to give you a little play-by-play here. That was quick-footed thinking by our producer.
Talk about making chicken salad out of chicken, Gary. This is it right here.
Yeah, baby. That's right.
Who else has a Will McDonough soundbite like that?
Nobody. Nobody. You do, though. You do. Gary was also very, very happy to play for me his ringtone earlier this week.
All right, Gary, thanks.
Right? Don't you have this song as a ringtone? Little Afternoon Delight? Now, the key question is, though, is that who is calling you when this ringtone plays? Is it a specific ring for somebody or just a general? You'd better say your wife.
Cherry pie?
Yeah, there you go. All right. That's what I thought.
Not specific.
Not specific. Okay, very good. All right, there's still a couple of minutes here for your emails. If you'd like to do so, webradio@patriots.com. If you want to predict the score of the game, I'll read a couple of them here. We have Norv Turner of the San Diego Chargers from the conference call with Patriots Media, and also LaDainian Tomlinson get to here before the end of this particular hour. Patriots and Chargers playing for the 37th time overall on Sunday night, and believe it or not, I know it sounds hard to believe, but it's the third time in just a little over a calendar year that these two teams are going to play, which is certainly has a lot to do with why the coaching staff looked at preparing for this game a lot like a divisional game. Because, frankly, it seems like they're in the same division, having played now three times in just a little over 12 months. So last season, of course, in the AFC Championship game, January the 20th, the Patriots won 21-12 here at Gillette Stadium. And, of course, the Patriots beat the Chargers 38-14 in their regular season home opener back on September the 16th of last season. That, of course, in the aftermath of Spygate, and the Patriots kind of took out their frustrations and whatever else they took out on the Chargers that particular day. The series dates back to 1960, first season ever for these two franchises in the old AFL, inaugural season, and the Patriots hold a 20-14 lead with two ties in the series, and the Patriots have also won two of the three games that these two teams have played in the playoffs against each other. So the Patriots have a slight upper hand in the series against their old AFL rival. Arguably, other than the AFC Championship game this past year, the other big game really that these two teams have played would have had to have come back in 1964 when Patriots and the Chargers played for the old AFL Championship. And, of course, that was a game that the Chargers won handily by a 51-10 score. I certainly don't think that this Sunday is going to turn out like that, but I know that's one that the Charger fans seem to always hang their hat on, and Patriots fans always seem to remember because it was technically the first time that the Patriots played for a championship, and they were handily defeated. But that, of course, was 44 years ago. The last 35 years, the Patriots 13-2 against San Diego. That includes regular season and playoff games. San Diego is one of those teams, though, that Bill Belichick does not have a winning career record against. Belichick is just 3-4 in his career against the Chargers. He's 2-2, however, as head coach of the Patriots against the Chargers, but 3-4 overall against San Diego as a head coach in the NFL. What does that mean? Not a lot. Just to give you a little perspective as to where these two teams come into this game against each other. Of course, these two teams also played in the playoffs in 07. In 07. January the 14th of 07, the Patriots, of course, won here 24-21 on their way as well. So let's see, where are we? 1-3 and then 1-0. Yeah, in 2007. There we are. Okay. Wanted to make sure that I had the right year. It was 2007, and they won it at Qualcomm. That was the game, of course, that the Patriots were, accused of being, shall we say, less than sportsmanlike against the Chargers and what started some of the ill will and the current bad blood against the, between the two teams, the Nick Hartwick and some of the other guys that have had some things to say about the Patriots, all spawned pretty much from that 24-21 win at Qualcomm a couple of years ago. Jack sends this email, and he says, okay, I know I'm being a homer here. I think the Pats have a lot working in their favor here. Number one, Chargers are desperate to win this game, and desperate people make mistakes. It's one way to look at it, Jack. Number two, there is still the bad blood, which may produce penalties against the Chargers. Number three, no Merriman. Number four, the self-proclaimed classiest crybaby LT is playing hurt. Number five, the mouth, Rivers, as good as he is, will start talking smack and only put a bullseye on his chest for the Pats D. Unfortunately, I don't think it will be a big margin, but I do think we will pull out a W. And Jack says, Pats 27, Chargers 24. The Pats win at San Francisco may not have been stellar, but it reminded this team that they can get it done. You know, that last sentence right there, Jack, I think is a good sentence, and I think that sort of, you know, summarizes the feelings of a lot of people, myself included. And I sort of alluded to this earlier in the program today, but, you know, frankly, I think we know that, you know, hey, it wasn't a great game. You know, it wasn't a stellar game, as you put it, but it was a win. And I saw enough from that game to think that this team certainly has hope for improvement as this season progresses. I will not be devastated if this team loses this game. We all want them to win. As fans, we all want them to win. But if they lose, it shouldn't be a devastating loss. And then again, you know, if you lose half the team to injury, then I guess that could be considered devastating. But all things being relative, even if they do lose, they've still got plenty of season ahead of them, plenty of divisional games ahead of them, two shots at the Bills ahead of them. There are plenty of opportunities to continue to improve. And I think that, to me, is the plus that the Patriots have going on. This is almost, gang, this is almost a gravy game, you know? One of those games where, hey, it's great if you can get it, but if you don't, eh, it's kind of like extra gravy on your potatoes. And that would be kind of how I term this one, kind of how I look at it. It'll certainly be good if they can get it. They're going to go out and try to get it. But if they don't, eh, you know, let's just see what happens. Let's let this thing play out. As Jack mentioned, and as we've kind of talked about here today, that this team is the San Diego team has their backs to the wall a little bit more so than the Patriots do coming into this. They're 2-3. They've got a tough road to hoe even after the Patriots leave Qualcomm on Sunday. They got to play Buffalo, and then they got to go to London to play one of those, you know, NFL Europe games. They got to play the New Orleans Saints and a quarterback in Drew Brees, who you know would just love to have some payback against the team that deemed him, you know, basically too expensive and you know, just, hey, you know, we're going to go a different direction here. That's a tough road to hoe still to come. So the Chargers probably need to play with a little bit more of a sense of urgency. And I wonder, do you get the sense of urgency that the Chargers may should be feeling when you listen to head coach Norv Turner? I want you to kind of listen here. And Coach Turner obviously was on with members of the Patriots media earlier. And let's see what he has to say about heading into this game against the New England Patriots.
How much has the loss of Merriman hurt you, hindered you defensively?
Well, you know, you get into a situation and you're going to have seasons where you lose some key players. And, you know, we've had some guys step up and play well. You know, obviously, Giles Tucker stepped in there and played well and then pulled the hamstring. So that probably you know, wasn't great timing, but, you know, you're going to miss, the impact plays that a guy like Merriman play, makes, but, you know, that's part of this league and part of, you know, going through a 16 game season.
Norv, it's just kind of surprising to look statistically. Your pass defense is, you know, really, I think it's the last in the league and with such a talented secondary. How do you explain that?
Well, we have had some changes. We've plugged in a couple new guys and, you know, we played the first two games of the season. We played two quarterbacks that were extremely hot and played at a real high level. I think since those two games, we've played better and hopefully we are improving in the secondary.
What have you seen from LT this season? I know he's been hampered by a bad toe. Is that maybe the reason for his kind of his production being down thus far?
Well, the biggest thing is, you know, LT was had a good game against Carolina, and obviously Carolina, as people look at him now, I mean, in week one, I don't know, people knew a lot about him. You look at him now, and obviously they're playing at a pretty high level and are 4-1. They're a good run defense, and LT had an outstanding game, had 96 yards on probably 22, 23 carries, had some physical runs, had some slashing runs, and looked awfully good. Unfortunately, in the fourth quarter of that game, he hurt his toe. You know, he hyperextended it, and his turf toe, whatever you want to call it, it's swollen and sore. Now, it's gotten better, and I think, you know, he's getting close. He's getting back. The issue is for us, obviously, to get enough plays, move the ball well enough, convert enough third downs where we can get him his 20, 25 carries. We did that in the Raider game, and he got 100 yards. And I think in that game started getting into a little bit of a groove. And that's the biggest thing, the combination of getting him healthy, getting him 100%, and then you know, getting ourselves where we're playing at a level where we can get enough runs.
What's your impression of the Tom Brady-less Patriots?
Well, you know, you look at them, and most of the guys are the same guys that we've played the last few times we played them. And, you know, there's going to be an adjustment. You asked me about Merriman. There's going to be adjustment when you lose a guy of Tom Brady's stature, of his ability, and his leadership, and, you know, all the things he's accomplished. But I think you see improvement. I've seen confidence in over the last 4 weeks, and obviously it was kind of a coming out game against San Francisco, and you know, Matt is looks like he's getting a real feel for what they're asking him to do.
Norv, does it give you guys some confidence? I know this is probably not the start you wanted, but basically the same thing happened last year and you guys got to the AFC Championship games. Does that give you guys something to draw on now that you're in this spot?
Well, a year ago, there was a lot of newness to our team, so I think everyone was kind of searching and trying to figure out what the problem was. You know, I think this year, you know, as I said, we've lost two games early in the year on the final play of the game. You know, so I think our guys know why we're in this situation. We know we have a challenging schedule ahead of us. But the fact that, you know, I think that we did it last year, but I think the fact that these guys have had a lot of success and have been in situations where they got on a roll and won a number of games in a row, you know, that's what obviously we're going to have to do if we're going to come out of this. First of all, you have to win a game, and then you have to, you know, get on a little bit of a roll and win a number of games in a row.
That's Norv Turner, head coach of the San Diego Chargers, with members of the Patriots media. You have the impression that, you know, he's pretty even keel kind of guy, almost to the point of being low key. I don't think you would want to, you know, show the hand that you're holding anyway. And if they're feeling any pressure, if they're feeling like, you know, hey, you know, we got to get this thing done, they're not showing it. And I think that's pretty good because, frankly, you know, you never want your opponent to see a sweat, so to speak. But then again, he also pointed out something I think that's very important to understand here. You know, this team is really two single plays away from being 4-1 at the worst. 4-1 at the worst. And it's not inconceivable for this team to be 5-0 at this stage by any stretch, by any means. They're that close to being, you know, one of the elite right now in the NFL this season alone. They lost a couple of games in last second plays, and they lost a game to Miami last week that, you know, hey, it was only 17-10, but, you know, it was a game in which they, you know, flopped miserably on offense and allowed Miami to take it to them physically. So, I mean, you know, but it was a one possession game at the very least. They're not that far away, and rest assured that point has been driven home this week as the Patriots practice out in Santa Clara and out at San Jose State University. That's, you know, that has to be a point of contention for the Patriots this week, that these guys, you know, don't be fooled by their record. I am not fooled by their record. You know, yes, they do have some injuries. They do seem to be piling up. It does seem like the deck is stacked against the Chargers a bit going into the game. If you're a Patriots fan, you look at it saying, well, hey, physically speaking, we probably match up as well with them as maybe anybody else we match up with this year, because the other team who could have an advantage is at a bit of a disadvantage, or at worst, even with the Pats, because they're dinged up. I mean, if they have a less than 100% LT, and we'll hear from LaDainian Tomlinson in just a couple of moments, if they don't have a healthy Antonio Gates, which Peter King told us in the opening hour today they won't have, if they don't have a healthy Chris Chambers, which he may be a game-time decision, he was walking normally, doesn't mean you can run or cut normally, earlier, and that was a media report from San Diego from yesterday. You know, you've had defensive guys as well who have been banged up a little bit. I mean, you know, this is an opportunity here for the Patriots. It's an absolute opportunity for the Patriots. We want to hear from him? All right, let's do that. So Matt Cassel has completed his conference call and his press conference from San Jose State University from earlier today. And let's let you listen into a little bit of what Matt Cassel had to tell members of the media.
Hello, Matt. How's it going out there?
Good. It's going well.
You're out in your home area generally, or actually you're a lot farther north. But, I mean, you know, still it's California and all that. But you can't really afford to look at it as anything but a business trip, as you've told us. Has it been that so far? Has it been productive? What's it been like?
Yeah, it's been great. It's been, like we talked about before, it's definitely been a business trip. And we understand what we're out here for, and that's to play football and get that aspect taken care of first. And I've talked to my family and seen a little bit of them, but they all understand and know that this is my job and it's the number one priority right now.
Matt, how satisfying was the last game's offensive production to you?
It was a big win for us, and I thought the offense came out and played well. We ran the ball well. We had a balanced attack. We had some good efficiency in the passing game. So overall, I thought we did well, and hopefully we can build on that and continue to grow as an offense.
Matt, I suppose a lot sometimes gets made of things. We know that as you are growing and into your role, that things come slowly or gradually. There seemed to be a big fuss about getting Randy Moss involved in the offense, and obviously you did in the last game. Would you call that a natural progression of everything that you're having to learn and to go about now that you're entrenched as the starting quarterback?
Yeah, I think you continue to learn something each and every week, and especially as a young quarterback, and you're thrown into the fire like I was early on in the season, and you go and you try to get better each and every week. And I rely a lot on the coaching staff to put me in a good position, and I try to just go out there and execute the game plan to the best of my abilities, and hopefully I'll continue to progress and continue to get a feel for what they're looking for on particular plays, and if I can get the ball to Randy, that's great. You know, I'd love to do that each and every week, and we weren't really able to do that week two and three, but definitely last week we were, so that was great.
Matt, all along you've had Welker available to you, and you worked a few other people into it. Can this offense really be successful, though, without just the threat of Randy Moss? I mean, is the threat enough, or do you really have to go to him, and do you have to complete those passes? Obviously, you got the one long one in this pass game. The second one was intercepted. But at least now they had to respect you. Do you feel like that's something that just absolutely has to be there for you to succeed?
Well, you have to try to get the ball to your playmakers, and obviously Randy's one of the best playmakers in the NFL. And so we're going to continue to try to do that in whichever way we can. And I'm not, you know, I told people this before, but I rely heavily on the coaches from a play-calling standpoint to do that, and then I just try to go out there and execute it. So, you know, I can try to force the ball downfield and do these things, but that's really, for me, I'm just going to go through my progressions, and if we talk about trying to get him the ball, then that's what I'll do.
How helpful was the running game in this past week's game, too?
It's always helpful. Anytime you can get the running game going, it opens up other aspects of the offense, and those running backs ran hard, Sammy and Kevin and Lawrence and Lamont, so they're all running the ball real hard, and hopefully that continues.
Well, I guess I'll continue here, Matt. As you look at San Diego, obviously you've been a part of these games and you've watched, watched the Patriots from your vantage point taking them on. Now you're the one who has to step in. You're going in against a fairly successful defense, but one that's missing, obviously, one of its best players. What do you see in the San Diego defense right now that you really have to pay attention to?
You know, they're a very physical defense. Their front seven plays hard, and they're aggressive, and they try to create a lot of pressure at the quarterback position. And their secondary is doing a great job, and they've got some playmakers back there with Cromartie and Jammer, and West stepped in at the safety position and doing a great job. So they've got quite a few players, and they're a physical defense, and so we just have to be ready to match their physicality when it comes to getting off the ball, and whether it be running the ball or blocking them up front.
Does it leave any concern for you, or does it cause any, just knowing that they're going into this game at 2-3? This is the second year in a row that they've gotten off to a slow start, and it's pretty frustrating for them. Do you feel that going to San Diego, it's their home game, and they're the ones who might be a little desperate? Does that add to the pressure that you're going to be facing?
Not really. For us, we approach every game the same. You know, we go out with the intention of winning each and every game, and so we're not going to be surprised if they come out with intensity. We expect them to come out with intensity, whether they were 5-0 or whether they're 2-3. So we have to come out, and we got to play our best game in order to win. I mean, this is the NFL. Week in and week out, every team should come out and be eager, whether they're undefeated or whether they haven't won a game, you know, and that's just how it is. And that's how the NFL is. If you don't come out and you don't perform and you don't play well, then more than likely you're going to lose that game. So that's what we're expecting them to come out with a lot of fire and a lot of intensity, and we need to match that.
You get the national spotlight, too. You get NBC, you get Madden, you get all of that. Does that add anything to it, or is that something you just pay absolutely no attention to?
You just don't pay any attention to it. You go out and you got to play your game, and all the rest of that stuff just goes along with it, you know. Once you get out there and you take that first snap, all that stuff goes out the window. You know, you can talk about it and stuff, but the fact is, when it comes down to it, it's playing football.
Of course, is Matt Cassel, quarterback for the New England Patriots, from earlier today. He held a conference call with members of the Patriots media listening in back here on the East Coast and in Foxborough specifically. A couple of emails here, and then we'll wrap up with LaDainian Tomlinson of the San Diego Chargers here inside the playbook today. This one comes from Spencer, who says, first off, I hate the Pats. Nice way to start the email, huh? Of course, he says in his subject line, he's a Colts fan that listens every time. He says, the sad fact is I know more about the Patriots or the Patriots, that's for Fred from Bill Polian, right, than I do my beloved Colts. The Colts have nothing in the ballpark to what you offer with your podcast. The Colts podcast is awful. It is as vanilla and mass-produced as it gets. I have a friend who works in their broadcast and has relayed some Colts from some Colts bigwigs that anyone that criticizes the Colts isn't a real fan. That's what I love about you guys. You don't hold back if you feel that the Pats have made a mistake or a player isn't living up to his potential.
Dan Klecko.
It's honest. I find it amazing that you can attract a listener who had all of the Spygate stuff up, the Cheaties box, etc. Anyway, you guys are the best. A quick question. What is with the hate for Bill Polian? He is a great GM with an eye for talent. At least you have to give him that. With all that said, I hope Brady gets married and skips rehab so he will be out for next year as well. Oh, screw that. I want him back so we can relive the rivalry for at least one more year. Take care, and if you miss the playoffs, I will buy lunch as a consolation prize. Thank you, Spencer. I'm sure that the PFW guys will hold him to that, right?
Fred might be rooting for that now.
Yeah, he might be. He might be. I don't know that there's a real hate for Bill Polian. I think it's because he has a tendency, and again, this is just my own personal opinion here, Spencer, but I think when he calls the Patriots the Patriots, as he normally does, I think there's a certain amount of disdain and a certain amount of disrespect for what the Patriots have actually accomplished on the field from Polian. I think he feels like, there's, you know, I don't know if he feels like the Patriots cheated or what have you, but I think that there's a general feeling of disrespect from Polian, which is why the Patriots fans largely, you know, don't like him. As far as football is concerned, I would agree with you. Yeah, it's a pretty good eye for talent. Certainly, it all starts with having brought in Peyton Manning and then built the team around him. So in that regard, yeah, football wise, sure. And I think Tony Dungy is a very, very good head coach. But, I think that part of the reason that there is the rivalry between the two teams is because of the disrespect that is perceived, at least on this end, that Bill Polian gives the Patriots and their fans. Jeff from Connecticut says, Pats 13, San Diego 20. Cromartie will have a big day with two picks, and Sproles will score at least once. I think the Patriots are going to have trouble with keeping Sproles in check, and Cromartie will pick off Castle at least twice. Pat's offensive line stinks. San Diego will have trouble with pressure on quarterback, and Cromartie will get his picks. Obviously, Jeff really likes Warren Cromartie. Okay, well, that could very well be the case. I appreciate you sending it in, Jeff. Thank you. As I said earlier, I'm also going with the Chargers, much as I hate to admit it, but I am going to go with the Chargers, 24-22 in this one. Although I do think the Patriots will have an opportunity, and who knows, it's close enough, maybe Steve Gostkowski will have an opportunity. By the way, this is one of the worst, you know, fight song, theme songs. This is awful.
It's better than Miami Dolphins.
Well, Miami Dolphins isn't even original. Because the Dolphins...
This is a good one.
Got a little beat to it. The Dolphins robbed theirs from the Houston Oilers. So that's why that doesn't count. It doesn't even count.
It's still bad.
Well, it's bad, but it doesn't even count. It's so bad. You know, the Houston Oilers had the, you know, Houston Oilers, Washington Redskins, they had fight songs. Thank you very much. All right, and speaking of those San Diego Superchargers. Yeah, exactly. LaDainian Tomlinson, their running back who's had his own struggles. Thank you very much, Maestro. One more time. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, it's time to move along here. LaDainian Tomlinson had his own troubles this year with the toe, and who knows? Okay, I think I'm going to get beat right out of here, aren't I? Okay, LaDainian Tomlinson, same patch time, same patch channel next Tuesday.
LT.
Yeah.
How important is it for you guys to be home for this game?
Well, it's important because it's the next home game, and it's obviously important because we feel more comfortable playing at home when, you know, we need a win. So, you know, we don't have to travel, which is a good thing. And playing at home is always, from our history, has been good for us.
The Chargers have been in a kind of a situation the last couple of years where you get off to these slow starts and you have to fight and claw your way back before things are really rolling for you. Is that kind of frustrating right now?
Yeah, it is frustrating because you don't like to start that way. You would rather not, but it does make it difficult, more difficult in trying to fight your way back. But, you know, I think this team has the character and the right people on it to fight back and get where we want to be.
If you think back to last year's game, to last year's season, rather, and how you guys got back to even by November, it is a frustrating thing to have to fight like that, but you know that you have the capability to do that. Does that kind of sustain you a little bit as you see yourself now at 2-3 and knowing that it's time to start turning things around?
Yeah, it does help because you know you do have the ability and the skill positions to do it. You know, it just, for us, it's all about, I think, going out and making sure we prepare and making sure we really understand what's ahead of us, that everybody that plays us is going to treat us, you know, like a elite team in the National Football League. Same way with the Patriots. Everybody who plays the Patriots play them as their elite team. And sometimes I think, you know, you get caught up in not knowing how teams going to come out and play you so hard.
The status as a elite team, obviously you guys have lost an elite player in Sean Merriman. The Patriots obviously have lost Tom Brady. Does that bring both of you guys back to the pack a little bit? Does that change the dynamic of this game somewhat?
I think as far as the standpoint where, you know, people may look at the talent-wise, it does obviously take you down on the talent poll across the board as far as teams are concerned. But, you know, I think this is a perfect opportunity for guys to step in. You know, obviously it's tough to replace somebody like Sean Merriman and also Tom Brady. You know, but at the same time, somebody has to step up and you know, take their place. And you won't replace them, but hopefully you can get some production out of them.
Obviously, you don't have to go head-to-head with someone like Brady, but you're looking at what has been a pretty good defense over the last couple of years. They had not so good a game against the Dolphins. They came back strong against the 49ers. What do you see right now in the Patriots' defense that you really have to pay attention to?
Well, I think their front is always what controls their defense to me. They got, you know, one of the best fronts in football. When you look across the board, Wolfolk, Seymour, Warren, Brable, Thomas, you look at them guys and, you know, they're as good as anybody in the league. And so that's my concern when I look at their team. I think them guys is what make their defense go. And when they get after it, it's pretty tough to move the ball on their defense.
LT, how much is your toe problem hindering you as a runner?
Well, as a runner, you need, you know, pretty much everything that you have as far as your legs concerned, feet, toes, knees, all that kind of stuff, hamstring. Obviously, when you hurt one part of it as a runner, you know, it hurts you. But, you know, it's football. And as long as I've been playing, you know, there's no way that I can expect to not ever be hurt. But, you know, I got to play through it, and that's just a part of being a football player.
LT, is this you know, playing the Patriots, is this just another football game for you guys? Or with all the things that have been said and some of the bad blood and the close games you've had, is this a little bit of a different week?
No, it's the same game. You know, it's just another football game. You know, we can't make it bigger than what it is. It's the sixth game on the schedule, and it happens to be the Patriots. And so that's the way we're going to approach it. And, you know, we can't talk about anything really and truly in the past because we haven't beat them. You know, so for us, it's just another game.
What are your memories of the AFC Championship game from last year?
A tough fought game that, you know, the Patriots, for us, they made more plays than we made, obviously. And for us, you know, they did a great job in the red zone keeping us from scoring. And they scored when they needed to score.
What about personally for you?
There's nothing really to remember about it. You know, I didn't play much. That's the only thing that's the only thing to remember or really to forget.
What did you learn about your quarterback in that game, playing on a really bad knee?
What did I learn?
Huh?
I learned what I already knew about him. He's a tough joker, and at all costs, he's going to try to be out there and play, you know, whether he's hurt or not. And another thing is he obviously has a high tolerance, you know, for pain, that he can stand up to it and he can play through it.
If you guys, maybe we can do one more, just so I got to get him out of here so he can eat before practice.
LT, you know, after the game last year, I know it was a close game, some frustration. Nick Hartwick had called, you know, Richard Seymour dirty. Do you think that's how you guys feel about the Patriots, that they're a dirty team?
You know, we don't feel anything more or less about the Patriots than we do about a lot of the AFC teams that we play on a consistent basis. You learn things about teams when you play them a bunch. And obviously we played them a bunch. You know, that's how Nick felt after that game. You know, doesn't mean he feel like Richard is a dirty player all the time. You know, maybe some things happen where he felt like that. But no, we don't feel like they're dirty players at all. You know, they're football players. We see these guys in the off season all the time, and you know, there's no love lost at all. You know, it's not like we don't want to talk to them when we see them. You know, but during the game, when we've got to play against them, we want to kick their butt just like they want to kick our butt.